good evening. It's good that I don't have to ask you to sit in the middle because the music team already did that already. Tonight we are continuing, I believe it's our third week in this longest series. We have a six-week series. It's called Your Name, a sermon series on the names of God. And tonight, you will be seeing this word a lot since we just sang it, Jireh. Jireh. Well, I won't disclose everything about this word yet, but just keep this in mind. We just sang it, and we are going to take a look at what it means or where is it from in the Bible. Have you ever felt that God was asking you to let go of something significant in your life? Have you ever stood at a crossroad where God's voice seems unclear or even unreasonable? Have you ever experienced a moment in your faith journey when God doesn't make sense? When God doesn't make sense. Abraham was a key figure, as we all know, in the book of Genesis, the first book in the Old Testament. He was the first patriarch of the Israelites. So every Jewish people know him, kind of thing. But he was at a crossroad. And in Genesis chapter 22, God had quite a bizarre, I would use this term, bizarre command for Abraham. Take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering. This command from God appears to shatter everything that Abraham believed. Can you believe that? God was not asking Abraham, well, sell all your possessions and offer all the money to the poor. Well, that was easier. But for this one, to offer not the money, but his son as a burnt offering. And to understand how inconceivable God's command was, I think we need to know a little bit more about Isaac. In the verse we just read, Isaac was Abraham's son, his only son, his beloved son. Okay, that's pretty significant already, right? But if we trace back Abraham's story before Genesis 22, which is the chapters before that, actually, Isaac was more than just a child of Abraham. Isaac was, in fact, the promised son. Isaac represented the fulfillment of Abraham's long-held hope and the clear sign of God's faithfulness. So when Abraham was asked to offer Isaac as a burnt offering, he was at the crossroad when the promise didn't match the reality. The same God who gave the promise at this moment now seemed to stand in contradiction to it. So before we jump into the story of Genesis 22, let's have a quick recap of God's promise to Abraham. Let's walk through, I will call it, the promise trail in Genesis, a quick one. At the beginning of Genesis chapter 12, which is almost 10 chapters before what we just read, the Lord said to Abraham, "Go from your country and your father's house to the land that I will show you." Verse 2 of Genesis 12. "And I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." God calls Abraham, actually, if you know the difference, actually, Abraham was the name that we all know. But before that, actually, he had a slightly different name. So it's called Abram, A-B-R-A-M. And God called him and promises to give him, to make him a great nation. All the people of the earth will be blessed through him. All the same sounds pretty promising, right? But there was a situation. When God revealed to Abraham, he was already an old man, and he was childless. So bear in mind about this. So two chapters later, in Genesis chapter 15, actually maybe three chapters later, maybe I did the math wrong. Anyway, Abraham, who was childless, wants to clarify. He asked God about that promise. So in verse 3 of chapter 15, Abraham asked God, "Hey, behold, you have given me no offspring. But according to our culture, a member of my household will be my heir." This is how it worked, right? If no child, one of the household servant will take over. "And behold," he asked God, "the word of the Lord then came to him," actually. God said to Abraham, "This man, this household servant, shall not be your heir. Your very own son shall be your heir." Regarding who will inherit Abraham's possessions and become the beneficiary, you know, our modern term, right? God clearly told him, "It won't be your household servant, but a son from your own body." To Abraham, who was childless, God is actually now promising him a biological son. But since Abraham and his wife have no child, so his wife come up with a plan. Well, he didn't know what God would do, so his wife have an interesting suggestion. Genesis chapter 16, verse 2. "And Sarai," which is the former name of Sarah, so you see a slightly different spelling here too. "Sarai said to Abraham, 'Behold, now the Lord has prevented me," which is the wife, right, "from bearing child. But I have an idea. Go into my servant. It may be that I shall obtain children by her.' And Abraham listened to the voice of Sarai." So Sarai offered Hagar, actually, she was a female Egyptian servant of the family. And then it became like an attempt to fulfill God's promise, but by human means. Sarai took Hagar and gave her to Abraham as a wife. And soon, Hagar conceived when Abraham was 86 years old. And then Ishmael was born. But unfortunately, that was not what God's plan. And we will visit Ishmael's story in 3 weeks. So I won't go into that in the detail, but I just give you some idea. So this is how in between, right? Okay, after this Genesis 16, another decade has passed by. Abraham was already 100 years old. God said to Abraham, Genesis chapter 17, "As for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her Sarai, but Sarah." Okay, finally, Sarah is here. "Shall be her name. I will bless her, and moreover, I will give you a son by her." Wow. Can you imagine the surprise or the impact, you know, when Abraham heard about that? "Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac." This is where Isaac first appeared. So here in Genesis 17, God specifically named Sarah as the mother of the promised child. The child will be named Isaac, and God's covenant will continue through him, not Ishmael, but Isaac. So eventually, to make the story short, Genesis 21, Isaac was born. The Lord visited Sarah, according to Genesis 21. The Lord did to Sarah as he had promised. And Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age. Abraham called the son Isaac. Okay, that's good. After all the twists and turns, the promise of God is finally fulfilled. The promise finally became a reality after decades of waiting. Isaac was born, and they lived happily ever after. Wait, is that what the Bible said? Unfortunately, no. After a decade of waiting, can you imagine that one day God was commanding Abraham to sacrifice his son. So now you have all the background story. You know how difficult this command was. It is a moment when obedience would threaten the very promise Abraham has been waiting or living for, putting the entire promise in jeopardy. Can you imagine the Lord who gives, is now ticking away. No explanation, no roadmap, just a command. Imagine if you were Abraham. Imagine if you were Abraham. How would you respond at that moment when God's will seems contradictory? Are you still able to trust that God is good? Are you able to sing the goodness of God, as well we just sang last week, right? So now, let's go back to today's story in Genesis 22, which is a major turning point of the faith journey of Abraham. At the beginning of the story, God tested Abraham, as we just read already. After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, "Abraham," and he said, "Here am I." He said, "Take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love," we just read it already, "and go to the land of Moriah and offer him here, there as a burnt offering." God commanded Abraham to sacrifice Isaac, his promise, his future, his beloved son. First, pay attention to a small but significant word in verse 1 here. God tested Abraham, okay? God tested Abraham. Perhaps you might wonder, is it the only place in the Bible where God tests people? Actually, as we look at the Old Testament, there are other places when God's people were tested by God. Just give you two examples. In Exodus 20, Moses told the people at Mount Sinai, "Do not fear, for God has come to test you, that the fear of him may be before you, that you may not sin." So that was one example. Another example later in Old Testament, the story of Job, J-O-B, right? Which is God's testing of Job's integrity under huge suffering. So, God tests people. This is not exception, at least not in this story. And although God testing people were not common, but bear in mind, I'm sure you might have questioned, God never commands the sacrifice of children elsewhere in the Bible. God did not ask people to sacrifice the kid. The rest of the Old Testament actually forbids child sacrifice. So maybe you have the question in mind too. Right? So why was God asking Abraham to sacrifice Isaac? How could God want him to do such a thing? It just doesn't make sense, right? Well, although the Bible didn't reveal more detail, but one thing we are quite sure of based on what we just read, is that Abraham did not have, even though he heard a lot, Abraham did not have all the answer needed. You know, Abraham was probably in the same position as we are. And perhaps what sustained Abraham to keep going, to keep trusting, was the belief that God was his father who loved him based on his 100 years of experience, right? Almost 100 years. God is the loving father. Even though he didn't know why, you know, God asked him to do all this thing. So Abraham trusted and obeyed. Abraham obeys, and as the story proceeds, we notice that the Bible goes into great details on how Abraham obeyed God. Verse 3. So Abraham rose early the next morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac, of course. And they cut the wood for the burnt offering and rose and went to the place of which God had told him. Verse 4. On the third day, so that means they walk 3 days already, so not just 3 hours, 3 days, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar, which is the land of Moriah, God asked him. Then Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey. I and Isaac will go over there and worship, and then will come again to you. Verse 6, Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son, and he took in his hand the fire and the knife. When they almost reached the destination, verse 7, Isaac said to Abraham, my father. Abraham said, here am I, my son. Then Isaac said, hey, behold, the fire and the wood we have, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Hey, Dad, we have everything, except I think we forgot the lamb. Verse 8, Abraham said, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. Deep down, I don't know whether if you read this verse, deep down, can you imagine how Abraham was feeling? Abraham knew Isaac was the lamb. He knew. But it was a truth too painful to put into words, I'm sure, at that moment. So finally, they reached their destination. They built an altar and laid the wood on top. Then Abraham asked his son to climb on top of the wood. At that moment, Isaac probably sensed something was not right. But he knew his father loved him, so Isaac trusted. Isaac obeyed. The son climbed up onto the altar, and the father tied his boys to the wood. So, well, the Bible did not tell us if Isaac had any struggle or whether he tried to run away. Everything was ready. Abraham took the knife. I don't think any of us could truly comprehend how Abraham would have felt at that moment. Very likely, tears were filling up his eyes. Pain, intense pain, filling up his heart. The hands of the old man, remember, he's 100 years old, were probably shaking. And with a trembling hand, he lifted the knife high into the sky. At the split of the second, something happened. Verse 11, but the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham, and he said, here I am. Verse 12, he said, do not lay your hands on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. At that very last moment, God provides a substitute in place of Isaac. Verse 13, Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of Isaac, instead of his son. At that very last moment, God gave Abraham what he needed, just in time. So now the ram would die, so Isaac did not have to. Verse 14, so Abraham called that the name of that place, the Lord will provide. As it is said to this day, on the mountain of the Lord, it shall be provided. But I want to give you another version to compare, King James Version, which is the older version of the Bible, of the same word. And Abraham called the name of that place, Jehovah Jireh. As it is said today, in the mount of the Lord, it shall be seen. So this is where, actually, this is the moment we come to know God as Jehovah Jireh. Jehovah Jireh, the Lord will provide. It's from Genesis 22. Abraham called that mountain Jehovah Jireh, not just to commemorate an event, even though, well, I'm sure this is one of the events he won't forget, but he also wanted to name that place Jehovah Jireh to declare an unforgettable truth, only learned through radical obedience. And pay attention, the term here, the Lord will provide. The phrase is not just in the past tense, but in future tense, right? Jehovah Jireh is not just a conclusion to a dilemma, but a confession of trust that what the Lord has done, He will continue to do so. So at the end of the story, God affirms the promise. In verse 16, the Lord, angel of the Lord appeared again and said, "By myself I have sworn, declare the Lord, I will surely bless you. And I will surely multiply your offspring as the stars of the heaven and the sand that is on the seashore, because you have obeyed my voice." After Abraham's obedience in offering Isaac, God reaffirmed the promise and the blessing for, you still remember, right? Since Genesis 12, all the way here, 10 chapters, all the ups and downs. And through his offspring, Isaac, all nations of earth will be blessed. So, this is the story about Abraham and Isaac. This is a story about life when God doesn't make sense. This is a story also about Jehovah Jireh, about the Lord who is our divine provider. Now, we have walked through the stories. Perhaps you might ask, can we have some handles to make sense of this Jehovah Jireh moment? How do we make sense of this whole story? Let me give you three handles. How about that? Handle number one, God will not take away your son's or daughter's life, just as he would not take away Isaac's life. In case you wonder, okay, well, is God that crazy? As our God never changes. So we can trust that. God is good. God is faithful. God is righteous. We can rest assured that the same God who spared Isaac will not take your son or your daughter's life. So this is the first thing I want to make it clear after you read this story. Handle number two. Abraham became a great nation, not because of Isaac, but because of God. Abraham became eventually a great nation, right? God bless him. But the point is not because he has Isaac, but because of God. Abraham became a great nation because of the God who called him. It was not the son who secured the promise, but the God who gave it. God's promise was never anchored just in that gift, but in the God, the giver. Even when Abraham couldn't see the full picture, he chose to trust the one who could see the picture, who was in total control. So that's number two. The third handle I would like to highlight is that even when what you treasure most is in jeopardy, just like what Abraham just go through, God will never fail to provide what you need for your pilgrimage of faith. Even when what you treasure most is in jeopardy, God will never fail to provide what you need for your journey of faith. Even things seem to fail, God's name is still Jehovah Jireh. He is the Lord who provides at the right place, at the right time, because God never fails. As we wrap up the story about Jehovah Jireh, let me leave you with two reflection questions. How about that? As you look back, is there a location, as you look back, where God show up and provides? Where is your Jehovah Jireh? Not just in the Bible, but where is your Jehovah Jireh? Perhaps it was the summer youth camp where you make your first decision to follow God. Or perhaps it was the first family you met when you relocated to Vancouver 5, 10, or maybe even 20 years ago. As for me and my family, one place we call Jehovah Jireh in Vancouver is the intersection of Southwest Marine Drive and Holland Avenue. This is the map here. It was at this intersection where my son Caleb had a traffic accident when he was about 15 years old. When he was riding a bike from UBC back to Richmond, it was quite a serious accident actually, and Caleb was sent to the trauma unit of BC Children's Hospital. And after that accident, we were told that a lady called Valerie, who was driving behind Caleb, behind his bike, was the one who called 911. And we also find out later, before any first responder arrived, fire truck or police or whatever, right? Valerie remained by Caleb's side, on the road, at the scene, and making sure Caleb stayed conscious. Although I have never met Valerie in person, but you can imagine, our family was forever grateful to God's provision at that day, at that place, sending this good Samaritan, being there with my son at his life and death moment. So now, once in a while, I need to go to UBC, right? Every time I pass by that intersection, Southwest Marine and Holland Avenue, I can't help but recall that moment every time. Despite the tragedy, but that intercession for us, for our family, actually is a place of Jehovah Jireh, where the Lord provides, where we witness His faithfulness. What about you? As you look back at your life, are you able to name any place where you experience God's providence, where you witness God's protection? So that's reflection number one. Reflection number two, what might be your own Isaac? What might be your own Isaac? In the Jireh story, we would learn that even when what you treasure most is in jeopardy, God, Jehovah Jireh, will never fail to provide. So what or who is your Isaac? The one or the what you treasure most? Maybe for you, for some of us, maybe it represents a person, a future, an identity, or a position. Something you're afraid to lose. Something you have built your future around for many years. But has that one thing taken place in your heart that only God should have? Are you clinging to it out of fear of losing it? So church, now let's spend a minute, a moment of silence as we seek God and reflect on these two questions. Where is your Jehovah Jireh? And what is your Isaac? church, let's stand and let's pray together, shall we? Let's stand. God of Abraham, we declare that you are the one who sees what we cannot see. You are the one who walks with us into the unknown and meets us on the mountains we did not choose. So today we bring to you our confusion, our surrender, our trembling obedience. But we declare that you are the one who cares. You are the one who provides, not from a distance, but with love that watches every step of our life. You are the one who provides, not always on my schedule, but always with your faithfulness. So when we cannot see a way out, Lord, remind us that you have already seen into it. So like Abraham, Lord, help us to climb with open hands and a waiting heart. Help us to name the season we are going through, the place we are walking through, not by our fear, but by your provision. So with faith and hope, we declare that on the mountain of the Lord, you will provide, even here, even now.